Hello, I'm Michael McMullen. Welcome to the WPBSA official podcast. And we're here to discuss the news that I'm sure you've heard by now, the sad passing of Dean O'Kane, New Zealand's best ever player at the age of 61. And it's extraordinary, really, because Matt Hewitt, who produces this podcast, had been in contact with Dean over the last few weeks trying to arrange for him to come on. And he was very keen to join us from New Zealand. And Matt was actually in contact with him as recently as last Friday. We weren't able to arrange it in time for him to appear on our first series. But we then recorded the last episode of the series with Steve Davis and Neil Foulds on Tuesday night, in which we actually mentioned Dean O'Kane. And we were looking forward to having the second series and for Dean to join us. So you can imagine what a shock it was to then wake up the next day to the very sad news that Dean had passed away. And we felt it was appropriate to come on and just say some words about Dean and who he was and his significance actually in the game. And for those of you who already know about all that, perhaps have a chance to reminisce about it. So we're joined by the WPBSA chairman, Jason Ferguson, and the modern day voice of snooker, Dave Hendon. And Jason, we'll start with you. He was someone you knew well, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Michael. He was a friend. He was a great friend, actually. And he was somebody, certainly in my early career as a player, that I joined the tour and looked up to. He was already a senior player at that point and somebody I'd watched on TV through the 80s. And he was very nice to me, you know, from day one, and something that continued throughout my playing career and actually throughout my administration. And it's only, as you said, in recent weeks, we were chatting and exchanging messages about getting together online to do the latest podcast. And, you know, sadly, we're doing that without him at this moment in time.
Dave, much like myself, I was only really coming into the game at a time when Dean was starting to fade off the scene. But I know you interviewed him a few times, didn't you?
I did, yeah. He was very articulate, very interesting man. He had a very interesting background. He was actually a junior magician. And it was sort of thought that he might go down that path, but snooker gripped him, as it does so many people. He came to Britain when he was only 17 in the winter of 1981, all the way from New Zealand, about as far as you can travel. Was staying in horrible sort of places and just trying to make his way. And it took a few years for that to happen. We're thinking Neil Robertson, obviously, from Australia coming over with not a lot of money and making a go of it. But it's very, very difficult to come, you know, from another country and away from your family. I looked at the interview today on YouTube that was done in 1991, and he was talking about the fact that was at the peak of his powers. He only went home twice a year. So he was away from his family and friends, away from where he grew up. But, you know, the snooker bug really gripped him. But yeah, he was very interesting to talk to. I always sort of thought of him as a top 16 player. He never quite got there. He was number 18 at his highest. He was certainly good enough, I think. He actually said in that interview, though, that he was a bit inconsistent. He would often beat a top player, then lose to a sort of lower-ranked player. So that was maybe one of the reasons. But yeah, an interesting man. He had a lot more going on than just snooker, I think. You could have a conversation with him about lots of different things. And I was very saddened when I heard the news this morning because, you know, he was one of those figures who, he was just kind of always there as part of that scene, wasn't he, at that time, sort of mid-80s to mid-90s. Very much a top player. I always felt when he played a top player, he had a good chance of beating them. You know, like I say, I sort of associated him with being in the top 16. He just never quite managed it, but he made a big impact. And of course, for his country, you know, I mean, he was quite exotic. We never knew any players from New Zealand, but he was the one, wasn't he?
Yeah. You say he got to number 18. That was in the days when the rankings were only revised once a year, and three times he was number 18 without ever quite cracking it. You mentioned there he had a good record against top players. He beat Stephen Hendry actually shortly before Hendry became the youngest ever world champion. He also had a win over Steve Davis on his record as well. But Jason, that was a big thing about Dean O'Kane's story, wasn't it, that Dave alluded to there, coming over to the UK, which I think at that time, considering it was 1984 when he turned pro, in a much less connected world, it must have been extremely hard for him to come and relocate on the other side of the world.
Jason, yeah, absolutely.
Did he ever speak to you about that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Michael. He was one of those pioneers of the sport in globalising the game. And, you know, we can't thank him enough, really, for that contribution. And you can never underestimate the difficulties of a player that lived so far away. And having to make those trips all the time and being away from home and living on the road. And, you know, we talk about living on the road as a player. And, you know, he was doing it year after year and really doing it well. And he was such a natural player as well, had that natural timing, you know, when he was playing, and he was quite flamboyant. And over the years, I think he just, as a human being, he just got better and better. He was like, I'll describe him as a fine wine. As a human being, he just was so articulate. I think David used that word. He was interesting. He was great to talk to. He was polite. He had great manners. You could take him anywhere. He was just great to be with. And, you know, to do that and having come from all that way to compete on this tour is really quite something.
Well, let's talk about some of the highlights of his career. And we'll mention his Crucible history in a moment because it was very good. But Dave, for me, the thing I always think of first when I think of Dean O'Kane was the final of the World Team Cup. Now, a lot of people might not remember this, but it was a really big event back in the 1980s. And there couldn't be a South Africa team at the time because of apartheid. So to make up the numbers, basically, they had a rest of the world team, which consisted of the best players from countries who didn't have their own team. And Dean O'Kane was a mainstay of that. And in 1989, he played with Silvino Francisco of South Africa, Tony Drago of Malta. In the final against England, his team was Steve Davis, Jimmy White and Neil Foulds, who were literally the top three players in the world at the time. 8-5 down, first to nine, rest of the world came back to level it at 8-all. And then, Dave, it came down to an extraordinary one-frame decider between Steve Davis and Dean.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to say is, you know, to reach the final, because it's obviously quite a disparate team from different parts of the world. All the other teams are sort of bonded by nationality. But to reach the final was a great achievement. But yeah, they were one-frame matches, weren't they, within the longer match. So he came out to play, well, I think there were two-frame matches, and then the decider, obviously, is just one frame. And he came out to play Steve. And yeah, it went down to a respot, which, you know, is very rare. Obviously, we saw it later in the Masters with Williams and Hendry. At that time, Steve Davis, you know, would be favourite to kind of win any sort of frame, I suppose. But yeah, that was, I suppose, again, it was an example of Dean sort of, you know, I mean, he had a better career than most, we should say that. But he didn't quite get over the line that time. That would have been a big deal, I'm sure, to have won that. But great thrill, I'm sure, to play in that environment, having made all the sacrifices we talked about, to go out and play the great Steve Davis in a one-frame shootout, albeit didn't go over the line, and must have been a great thrill.
I think at the time, that was the longest frame that had ever been played on TV. I think it was at that stage. But Dave, it wasn't the only final he was in, actually, in 1989, because later that year, again, he just came agonisingly close to making what would have been a considerable piece of snooker history. He was one frame away from being the first player ever to win a ranking event in Asia.
Yeah, the Hong Kong Open. I mean, we take it for granted now, don't we, with Eurosport? You know, we see all the events from the Far East. I don't believe any footage of that. Well, I've never seen any footage of it. Yeah. I'm sure it was on television in Hong Kong. I'd love to see if anyone out there has got any, because it wasn't on European television. Lost to Mike Allett and a decider. Obviously, they were both looking for their first sort of major breakthrough. Again, just not quite getting the job done. But again, you know, to reach a ranking final, there weren't many ranking events at that time. And certainly, as you say, you know, to be one in that part of the world, it was a sort of new step for snooker. And that kind of was a springboard, like I mentioned, the top 16 thing, towards getting in. Maybe in this current system of the rankings, he would have got in almost immediately. But it didn't quite happen. Yeah, you know, it's a shame for him, not that he didn't get it done, but it must have been a big boost of confidence. And again, sort of saying to him, well, it was worth making this sacrifice of spending so much time away from home if you can actually get to big finals.
Jason, it's interesting we're talking about events in Asia. It was at another tournament in Asia some years later that Dean made headlines outside of snooker, because he was playing a tournament in Thailand. And this was 1995, so there was a lot of controversy going on at the time about the French government and where they were carrying out nuclear tests. It was a huge story at the time. And Dean actually wore a logo and made some comments in protest against this, which is really not the sort of thing that you see snooker players normally getting into. So really, Jason, at that time, you and Dean were probably the two most politicised people in the game.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned Thailand there. I mean, I think the first time I really got to know Dean well was 1993, and that was the Nescafe Asian Open.
Yeah, Dave Harold.
Imperial Queen's Park Hotel in Bangkok. There you go. Yeah. And in fact, you know, today somebody sent me a photograph that's hanging on the wall in our academy in Bangkok, and there's a picture there of me and Dino and the rest of the players in the lobby having a photograph taken. So, you know, so that was a quite a strong memory for me. But yes, he did become known for that political move. And I guess coming from New Zealand, you know, there was apparently nuclear testing going on at the time out in the Pacific region, and he'd kind of slipped that out into the arena and made a bit of a stand. And I don't think, if I remember right, I don't think he ever sided with anybody on it or anything. It was just an individual stance to say, you know, this shouldn't be happening. And so, yeah, he was an individual man. He had his own mind, and he was unique, actually, in his you know, in his manner. He really was. He was really a great guy, honestly.
His professional career wasn't that long, actually, when you compare it to some other players who turned pro at a young age. He stayed on the tour from 84 to 2001, and then actually did come back for one season a little while later. And you think of some of the players now who turn pro at that age, they go on much longer. But he'd had a decent run at it, and then he went back, Jason, to New Zealand, and I believe he became an estate agent. He was still involved in the game on an administrative and promotional side. Had you stayed in touch with him at all?
Yes, absolutely. We'd exchanged many messages, and in fact, we'd bumped into each other from time to time because, you know, at the WPBSA, we're heavily involved in sports development globally, and some of that multi-sport games work where you're passing through different countries and bringing people together. Of course, he was still one of the greatest players in that part of the world. You know, he was still had a great reputation for being a great player. So he would turn up every once in a while and we would share a joke and, you know, he would say, hello, dear boy, you know, in the most polite, I wouldn't say perfect English, but he spoke so so proper, actually. And it was always great to see him and have a giggle with him. And yes, and that's something that continued, you know, well, up until the last few weeks, really. So he'll be sadly missed by many. And I've seen today the outpouring on social media and the comments. And, you know, I saw one there from Warren King just now. You know, many will remember Warren King from Australia playing on the tour. And there's a little message on there to say that thank you for bringing him and his wife together. Apparently, responsible for bringing those two together. And I had the pleasure of meeting Warren in Adelaide not too long ago. And it is great to catch up with some of these guys. And I think, you know, looking at some of the messages, you realise you've got to try and maintain those relationships and keep in touch with everybody because, you know, all these people have made a great contribution. And snooker is a small community. And it's a community and there are a lot of friends and people that spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, Warren actually got to the final of the Mercantile Credit Classic in 1990, which was a surprise run. I think that was actually the tournament I was referring to earlier when I talked about Dean beating Stephen Hendry shortly before Stephen became world champion. And talking of the world championship, Dave, as you all know well, Dean has a very quirky record that he holds the record for the most times playing at the Crucible without ever playing there 2 years in a row. But when he did play there, he had some wonderful moments in Sheffield.
Yeah, I mean, that record, in a way, kind of is a microcosm of his career in as much as it was the inconsistency. He qualified one year, didn't qualify the next year. It's one of the more arcane stats in the almanac, and there's plenty of them. But yeah, he beat Cliff Thorburn in 87, which was a massive thing. You know, Cliff at the time, after Steve Davis, would have been one of the favourites. He was 5-1 up, sailing towards the line. And Dino Kane won 9 frames in a row, got to the quarters. 92, he was 9-6 down to Steve James in the first round, won 10-9, got to the quarters again. Hendry beat him there. And it's worth saying as well, and this is kind of, maybe people don't even know this, he actually commentated on the World Championship for the BBC. Yeah. I think he only did it 1 year, and it may just have been a sort of geographical thing. He wasn't sort of available. But in a way, he was the ideal choice, you know, he because, as we've been saying, he was articulate. You always sense there was a sort of world beyond snooker around him as well. You know, you'd mentioned the protest. That was something that you can't really envisage now happening. But yeah, he at the Crucible, again, he had his moments for sure, those two quarterfinals. But then you didn't maybe see him the next year. If only he could have gained a bit of consistency, I'm sure he would have climbed even higher.
Yeah, that first time he got to the quarters in 87, he played Jimmy White, and he was actually 9-0 down, but got it back to 9-5, and then Jimmy took over again. And one thing I remember about that match, Jason, it's a quirky thing I remember about Dean in general. We talk now about how the Crucible is the only place where the players sit absolutely side by side. Actually, back in those days, there were a number of other tournaments where that was the case as well. And it's always feels a little bit socially awkward when you see the two players sitting there in stony-faced silence, particularly if they're two guys that you know are actually quite friendly with each other. But one thing I remember about Dean, Jason, he was pretty much the only player who I ever saw, he would try sometimes to start a conversation with the other guy between frames.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great social person, and you know, his mood never really changed, actually. You know, he was always Dino and to us, and you know, you're right. You could sit with him, and he would strike up a conversation, as he did with me as a young player coming into the sport. And, you know, I think that's probably something that, you know, that that attitude is something that served him well in life after his playing career, and became successful in real estate. I'm not surprised. Again, he was just a great people person. And again, just coming back to the outpouring today, I don't think there's a person out there that that didn't enjoy Dino's company.
Well, of course, you're so known so well on the administrative side now, Jason. A lot of people might not remember you actually were a very good player yourself. Do you remember the last time you played Dean and the significance it had in your career?
You know, I don't know, but come on, I'm feeling you're going to tell me.
Well, I am going to tell you. So you were in the last 16 of ranking tournaments 10 times in your career. The last of those was at the Grand Prix in 1998, and you beat Dean O'Kane on the last black to get there. Wow. You must remember beating him on the last black, Jason.
Vaguely. It seems like a long time ago now. Yeah, vaguely. But, yeah, I mean, and I enjoyed that, you know, there was a great time on the tour for me. And, you know, there weren't quite enough events at the time. And I think that's why I got involved in other things, really, and, you know, outside of just playing. But yeah, yeah, last 16, 10 times, you say. Wow.
10 times it was, yeah.
Lost a few close ones, yeah.
Dave, just going back to the start of Dean's career, it was remarkable what he did, because he actually got in the top 32 in his first season. And I think at that time it may have been a three-year system, which means he got in there on the back of 1 year's points, got to the British Open quarterfinal in his first season, qualified for the Crucible in his first season, which was such a slog. Those kind of things just didn't really happen in those days.
No, I mean, I think that era is kind of, obviously Steve Davis came through, but it's sort of still associated with sort of older players who have been around a long time and sort of earned their stripes. And there weren't that many sort of overseas players. Obviously, Cliff Thorburn had already been world champion. The sort of Canadians were doing well. Eddie Chant from Australia and a couple of South Africans. But, you know, like I said earlier, to have a player from New Zealand, he definitely added something. Again, I mean, you look at the, to mention the Crucible Almanac again, it'll tell you in there, there's only actually 20 nations represented at the Crucible. And New Zealand, obviously, proudly, is one of them. It seemed to me as well, he often played well on TV. That was the thing, you know. I have very vivid memories of watching him on TV. And like I say, always thinking if he played a top player, he would hold his own against them. Maybe sort of sometimes struggle in some of the qualifying environments. But yeah, he made a very quick breakthrough. And I'm sure there must have been times when he came over as a 17-year-old when he must have wondered, he's in the English winter. No money. What am I doing? You know, but that just tells you how snooker grips you. He had a dream. He followed it. He made a success of his career. And then when it ended, he went and made a success of another career in real estate.
Yeah. I think when it comes to the winters in this part of the world, we all wonder what we're doing here. And we were born here and grew up here. Well, Jason, you know, Dave and I grew up watching him on TV. Dave got to know him a little bit. As I say, I was just coming into the game as he was slipping out of it. But you knew him personally. So, Jason, I'll leave the floor open to you. What do you feel is an appropriate last word on Dean O'Kane?
I think from a personal point, it's just thank you for the memories and the good times. And there was never a dull moment with him. And as I say, articulate, professional, just he was just great to be around. And he'll be sadly missed by everybody that knew him. That is for sure.
And it's for sure that the snooker world is in shock today after this news that Dean O'Kane, such a fine player and so well-liked, has passed away at the age of 61. Our thoughts are, of course, with his friends and his family. And he will, as Jason and Dave have said, be sadly missed. Thanks for joining me, Jason and Dave, on the WPBSA official podcast. And thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.